You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, I'm delighted to welcome Penny Kelly back to the show. Penny is an author, teacher, speaker, publisher, personal and spiritual consultant, and naturopathic physician. In 1979, while working as a tool and process engineer for Chrysler Corporation, she experienced a full spontaneous awakening of Kundalini that completely changed her life. She left Chrysler and returned to school to study the brain, consciousness, perception, cognition, intelligence, and intuition. In 1987, Penny moved to Southwest Michigan and for 25 years has operated Lily Hill Farm and Learning Center. Today she travels, lectures, and teaches a variety of classes and workshops. She maintains a large consulting practice, writes books and poetry, raises chickens, cattle, and grows organic vegetables and fruits. She is the mother of four children and has written six books: The Evolving Human, The Elves of Lily Hill Farm, Robes, Getting Well Again, Naturally, Consciousness and Energy Volume 1, and Consciousness and Energy Volume 2. You can find out more on her website at www.pennykelly.com. So now, let's welcome her back to the show. Hi, Penny. How are you?
I'm fine. I am happy to be back.
Oh, me too, me too. Well, you know, it occurred to me in the last show that there's such a wealth of information in all of your books, but in particular, the book Robes, with the beings that shared pictures and visions of what was coming in our near future and even in our far future, that I thought it might be a good idea to set it up so that the listeners know who the Robes are, and then go more into depth about what they shared and the timelines that they're sharing about and what we can do about them.
Okay. All right. That's a good plan. Yeah.
Yeah.
So as far as, you know, I'm not sure I can answer the first question, who are they?
Right.
That may be the most difficult of all. They were just this group of little, short, round, glowing beings dressed in brown robes that went all the way to the floor. They were mostly bald. Most of them were bald. Or a couple of them had a little bit of hair, around the back of the head, but they were bald on top. And they were just, you know, they just appeared, and they would say the same thing every single time. We have pictures. We would like to show you. And I was, like I think I said once before, I wasn't very graceful in the beginning. And then finally when I did agree at about the third visit to look at their pictures, I thought I was just going to see a couple things, I didn't know what, and they would be gone. And that didn't happen at all. They continued to show up, every couple weeks, sometimes once a month, sometimes twice in a month, sometimes a month and a half would go by. I never asked who they were, their names, where they came from. I was so stressed because of the difficulty I was having with Kundalini at that time. My consciousness and my perception were totally out of my control. And so I was just, when they stopped coming around after about 2 years, I was absolutely relieved that I didn't have to deal with that anymore. And it wasn't until about 11 years later that they showed up in the middle of the night and said, "We want you to write down those things that we showed you." And I was like, "What? Yeah, no way." And so we had, you know, a fairly intense discussion, and somehow, I mean, their attitude was, "Yes, you will," and pretty soon my statement was, "Well, I'll see what I can do." And I started writing. It took me about 6 years to get it all in the book. I kept throwing away one manuscript after the next because they were too doom and gloom. And that wasn't the attitude that they came across with. They were cheery. They were very peaceful. They were bright. They were very positive. They seemed almost excited. And I could not capture that at first.
So, huh, interesting.
Yeah, took a while.
So now, what are some of the... we're kind of in the beginning of the timelines that they were talking about back in 1987 or so. Weren't they sharing about this period of time now?
Yes, they were. They were saying that the majority of what I was seeing was going to be happening in the first quarter century after 2000, after the, you know, the new millennium started. But we actually did visit, you know, time frames in 2080 and as far out as 2413. And it was pretty amazing. By 2030, it was a little bit discouraging. But by 2050 and certainly by 2080, I was really quite excited about what I was seeing. So the technology, you know, they kept talking about this global network, which didn't exist at the time. And the technology was absolutely stunning. The way that houses and people and families and businesses were organized was completely different. Education was completely different. We did not have the kinds of roads and interstate systems that we have now. We didn't have the government we have now. We didn't have the nations we have now. So I saw a lot of things changing, and that part of it was upsetting. But their big excitement over and over was, you know, this is the time for you, you humans, to take a charge of what you want to create. The future is in your hands. And I was like, no, the future, somebody out there does that future, not us.
Right.
Yeah, it was a real growing up kind of process, as well as a spiritual and, you know, every other kind of process. Everything in my life was changing at that point.
Since we are not at that point yet, we're kind of at the point where the old paradigms are about to collapse, and that would include the corporations and the multinationals, the various secret organizations and so on, and all of the fighting that is going on now is going to pale in comparison with, apparently, with the coming earth changes and the food and water shortages.
Well, I guess I don't, I mean, there are changes coming. I think the thing that was hardest for me to see was what they called World War III. It wasn't like any of the other wars. It was just this whole series of regional conflicts happening everywhere. There were no big, you know, confrontations by major nations. It was all just little petty crap that people were manipulated into getting caught up in. And those people who could not get beyond the concept of revenge really went down, really had a hard time. The you know, that was something that was really hard to see.
Mm-hmm.
There were some... you know, there were quite a few natural disasters that were happening in this time, and that has so far been unfolding, you know, at a rate that I have to say, yeah, I guess it's happening.
Right.
You know, but between the changes in government or nations and the regional conflicts with, you know, World War III, they called it, and there were also, they included in that World War III, the corporate conflicts that were shaping up. Right about now, those corporate conflicts were based on one side being people who needed a job, wanted to keep their job, wanted to keep working, and other people who said, your corporation is destroying our earth, and you need to stop. And after a while, people went after the court, or through the courts, they went after the corporations, and they did a lot of that kind of thing. But after a while, they started publishing lists of who was working for who, and people who were working for corporations that were really, really destructive started finding themselves in danger, and I really didn't like that kind of thing, but there was, I mean, people were desperate to stop the, you know, the degradation and the destruction of natural systems on the planet. So a lot of chaos there for a while, and everybody was fighting everybody over everything.
Yeah, well, it's getting there pretty quickly right now, isn't it?
It is. I think, well, if it doesn't get any worse, and then the next month I think, well, if it doesn't get any worse, it gets a little worse, and the next month I think, well, if it doesn't get any worse.
We're like frogs in a boiling pot, you know. We're just at that temperature where we're just about, you know, hitting the bubbles.
Yep.
Well, they point out a lot of interesting information that I know you had already aligned with as a person who's involved with organic farming and permaculture, and that is that we're not getting the nutrition from our food from the box stores. There is no nutrition in the food, and that is cause of the creation of so much disease, and it will be the ongoing creation, the desire, you know, the need for fast food as we continue on.
Right.
And when I got towards the end of the book, I realized that over a period of 400 years, you accounted for about 12 million deaths a year for each year of those 400 years.
Yeah.
And that's not surprising.
Well,
that people,
go ahead.
That people are, you know, we have GMO food, we have all kinds of chemicals and additives and fluoride in the water, and who knows how many other things are, you know, lurking in the wings that we don't know about. We only know about those. And so there is a lot there to degrade the human system, let alone the fact that just the food has no nutrition in it, and it doesn't have any life force or chi. So that's the big problem. And then when we take in food that's dead, we become that. We become like the walking dead. So I can see where people might not wake up to this soon enough, because it's so easy to be swayed by the idea that, oh, everything's all right. I got to just get through today. I'm going to drive through the drive-thru right now, and I'll fix a good dinner tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always just tomorrow a disease.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, you know, at the time that I was listening to them talk about food, they made it clear that they used the term real food. And I thought, what? You know, food is food. And I really, really, it was like probably 10 or 20 years later that I happened to be studying for my degree in naturopathic medicine, and I read a book titled Nutrition and Physical Degeneration by Weston Price. It's now becoming really pretty popular and pretty famous, the Weston Price Foundation. But at the time, it was something that very few people were interested in. And it turned out that that was when I really came to understand that the entire prison system, the entire school problem of being unable to learn, the depression, the medical system, you know, the whole thing was really the result of a lack of nutrition. And this little dentist named Weston Price had done this amazing research over 15 years. He took a troop of nurses and dental assistants and, you know, people on these to these places where he looked at the health, the teeth, the bone structure, et cetera, of like people who had not taken up the Western white man's diet. And they were not involved with white flour, white sugar, canned vegetables, canned fruits, alcohol, or tobacco. And maybe a little bit of tobacco. I'm not sure. I think there was some smoking in a few of them. But the difference, and he had, the book is full of photos, and the difference is absolutely astounding. And what you realize is that if the food doesn't have any nutrition in it, that nutrition is the building block, or are the nutritional elements are the building blocks that allow a skull to build out fully, or a brain to build out fully, or teeth, the jaw, to build to its full original size. And when there isn't enough nutrition, the body starts to cut back. The lungs get long and narrow, and then you have asthma. The nasal passages close up, and they're too close together. They're too small, too narrow to get in good oxygen. The teeth don't fit in the jaw because the jaw bone is not big enough. The brain doesn't fill out in the skull, and so you have ADD and ADHD and the whole indigo syndrome. You've got all these problems. You've got clubbed foot. You've got spinal bifida. You have tuberculosis. You have bacteria, et cetera. And you have what he called an inability to maintain high-level immunity. And high-level immunity was absolutely, we have no concept of what that's about. That allows us to be warm when it's 30 degrees out and we don't have a coat, to be cool when it's 100 degrees out and we don't have an air conditioner. It allows us to fight back bacteria, to for teeth to repair themselves when they get a cavity, which is rare when you have high nutrition. Just all kinds of things, heart disease, you know, arthritis, all of those things were totally unheard of in those populations he studied. And he came back and measured, well, how much nutrition is in the food that we're eating nowadays? And in most cases, there was, I'm going to say, in some cases, there was 50 times more minerals in the food than there is in today's food. And that was back in the 1920s, and our soil has degenerated further since then. And, you know, a minimum of 10 times more, not 10% more, 10 times more. And so we're not getting nearly the nutrition that we should be, even from what I'm going to call good organic food. And when you subsist, which is really subsistence living, on fast foods and foods that don't have any nutrition in them, then you are going to first gain weight because the body is always calling for food, and then you are going to run into whatever your family weak spot is, whether that's a bad heart or bad kidneys or, you know, bad lungs or bad bones, whatever. And it's a problem from there on. So, and when our entire population is, you know, we are just so diseased at this point, so weak. One of the things that he pointed out was that when you have a population that has high nutrition and, you know, high levels of what he called peacefulness, you don't have any crime. Crime just disappears. You get, and he had pictures of criminals that, you know, he showed in his book almost always. You could see just by looking at them that the face had not built out, the brain was crowded, the pituitary gland did not develop correctly because the palate, the upper palate in the mouth, was too high and too deep, and the sucking reflex, which is supposed to help develop the body, did not work because there was no sucking pressure on the upper palate, and And the result was irritable people who didn't even know why they were irritable. Depressed people who couldn't kick the depression. It was tragedy. So here we are, you know, dealing with all of that. And then, you know, in addition to the nutritional thing, we have this absolutely immature ideology that we have going here among many of the leaders of the world. It's a power play. It's a game. It's like a chess game of power. And we're the pawns. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's really awful to look at, and it's sometimes discouraging, but most of the time I'm really pretty upbeat and pretty, I see huge changes happening under the surface, and I think they're going to, come up more and more and more and more and make a big difference. So we're headed in some good directions. It's just not really, you know, obvious yet for the majority, but there's quite a few people who are saying, you know, what we're doing isn't working, and I don't know why, but it really, you know, I'm not for that system anymore. And they don't know what they're for, but that's going to be together. So.
Right. Well, you know, being for things that affirm life, being pro-life is a good place to start.
Amen. Yes.
You know, that covers a lot of territory right there. And I also like that they talk a little bit about religions, and I think they state that there are no gods, no heavens or hells. There are only belief systems that keep us disempowered. But they do talk about a Godhead. Did they ever get into their own spiritual take on things?
No, they did not. And it took me a long time until I understood that I had been into that Godhead in the Kundalini experiences. Again and again, you become Source. You actually end up, all of yourself melts away, and you go into that Godhead. And even with numerous personal experiences of going into that Godhead, of, I'm just going to say some of the things I do, you know, managing my dreams in a lucid state, traipsing around through various dimensions, going to the other side where family has died, visiting them, et cetera, tracking and, you know, and supporting the rebirth of three of our grandparents who have come back and who have let me know they were coming and where they were coming and when they were coming and to whom they were coming. You know, with all of that, I still had in my little compartment over here this box that said, there's a God, there's a heaven, there's a hell, there's angels, there's all that stuff. And it wasn't until just recently, you know, that I began to realize that none of that is true. And it was really after my mother's death and then Dr. Levengood's death and then my sister's death, all in the 1 year's time, that I realized that my perception of the structure of reality was vastly different from what people believed, and that in general, what religion was teaching was mostly hogwash. It was the same level of accuracy as Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. None of it is true. So, you know, at that point, I was, that was when I started to write Consciousness and Energy, Volume 3. So, you know, I think we need some education in terms of the structure of the psyche. You know, in terms of understanding time and how time works. Because if you imagine this gigantic soup out there, and within the soup, there are all these little areas defined by a certain kind of cooperation within the particles or within the light particles of that little location. And let's say that the, you know, the cooperative particles in one spot form a cat, and in another spot they form a woman, and in another spot there's a machine, and in another spot there's, you know, something else, a tree, or, you know, a butterfly, whatever. And each one of those spots is like an energy zone, and it's doing something. And when an individual moves their perception from one thing to the next, those things may be widely separated in terms of spatial placement, but they end up looking like they're connected by this thread called time, and it's really time is just the rate at which your perception moves from place to place in the space-time continuum. And the reality that you get as a result of that movement is a kind of a conglomeration or a total, sum total, of where you happen to be putting your perception and where you happen to be located in that medium of space-time. So therefore, you get somebody in, let's say, Kansas, who's teaching at a school and has a peaceful life, and, you know, who hears things on the news happening somewhere else in Afghanistan or wherever, or the Middle East. And then you've got somebody in the Middle East who's caught up in just a nightmare of death and destruction and difficulty. And, you know, you could look at those two individuals and say, wow, they live in two different worlds. And they do. The guy or woman or whoever it is in Afghanistan could go to Kansas and they would say, oh my gosh, you know, there's no death and destruction in the world. That's happening over there.
Right.
The guy from Kansas could get, you know, drafted and sent to Afghanistan and enter this nightmare. And so it all depends on where you choose to be, what sort of options you have in to, you know, change the experiences you're having, and where you choose to put your perception, and that, you know, the world itself has an impact, as well as what you choose to put your attention on. So that whole thing about time is really, you get a lot of people agreeing that, yep, this happened, and then that happened, and then that, and then that, and so they'll say, yep, that this was the cause. And really the cause was when they first happened to begin paying attention. But there really isn't anything such as time. And when I was experimenting with, you know, going into the future, changing the past, you know, all those kinds of things, the big discovery for me was sort of like, oh, my God, you can. You can change the past. And you can change the future, but you have to be conscious enough to do that, and you have to be, you have to have some skills, and you have to have a little bit of education about how consciousness works, and then you have to be fairly comfortable with your own power. If you're not comfortable with your own power, then typically you're going to throw that power over the fence and let somebody else make all the decisions, and then you may or may not be happy. But to grow spiritually means to take up one's power and be responsible for the world you are creating, at least first in your own life. And then, you know, beyond that, to make the world a better place for others as well.
And of course, that requires a degree of a lack of ego and self-service, or you know, self-serving. So one has to have some degree of the an ability to think of others and to empathize, to have empathy and intuition. And it seems that those who are lean towards the path of being more of a psychopath, which is complete disconnect from anything living, they tend to work up to the top levels in corporations and in government. So it's a strange combination that we have people who don't have empathy, much of it in any case,
right,
running things, and as a result, it's a top-down kind of directive. You know, you don't need empathy. You just need to take care of yourself and get yourself ahead. You need to get more of it, more, better, more better and best.
Yeah.
And so, I totally agree with everything you just said. And
let me say something about sociopathic and psychopathic behavior. All feeling, all emotion is the result of a certain chemical state in the body. If your body cannot produce the chemicals, you are not going to be able to have certain feelings. And so when I was teaching at a school for severely emotionally disabled and learning disabled children, I did a lot of reading, a lot of study, and it became really pretty clear that children who had a particular combination of bad nutrition and poor fathering ended up being the ones who were psychopathic, or their bond had broken with their mother, but especially if it had broken with the father, very difficult. Then you ended up with somebody who couldn't feel and who was at some level unbonded and therefore kind of a loose cannon. And their inability to feel was often accompanied by an inability to recognize patterns. So a face that's smiling is a pattern. If a face that's frowning is a different kind of pattern. And they were actually unable to recognize the difference between a smile and a frown. And so the subtle cues that you and I would respond to immediately, that completely went over their head. And the remedy for that is that we have to become more conscious of the nutrition before a woman gets pregnant. 12 months of high-level nutrition before you have that baby should be mandatory. And then the bonding between that child and at least somebody, if not the mother and the biological mother and father, at least somebody needs to stay bonded to that child and hold the space for that child to step into its own wisdom and grace. And we would have a very different world if we did that. So we've got a ways to go. We have our work cut out for us in many, many ways.
Do you think that it's going to become more important for us to grow our own food as a result of, you know, from all the things that we've been talking about?
I've put a lot of thought into that. It's not going to be really sensible for some people to try and grow their own food, but I think what we're going to end up having to do is to have quite a few people growing food, supplementing, you know, their own income and their own nutrition. I think that we need to really make some changes in the agricultural system, and we really have to, I think it's going to come down to people who are willing to grow food are going to end up contracting with others, and you will have a personal farmer like you have a personal hairdresser or a personal, you know, massage therapist or a personal teacher or guru or whatever. And
that's
I want to say
idea.
One other thing that goes back to the psychopathic, sociopathic thing. When you have people who really can't feel, can't empathize, can't sympathize, can't tell what other people are experiencing, they are usually willing, sometimes ignorantly, but they discover very quickly how well this works. They're willing to hurt others. And the power systems that we have in the world today all became top dog because they were willing to kill. They were willing to hurt. And that kind of willingness is something that we as a people are going to have to deal with. And I think one of the ways that we're going to be forced to, correct that situation is partly through food, partly through bonding, partly through very careful mothering and fathering, and a very serious confrontation. If you're a New Age person, you're not thinking about murdering somebody because they don't believe right. They don't think correctly. They don't, bow down to the same God that you do. Mm-hmm. But there are people in the world who are very willing to manipulate, to hurt, to threaten, and to kill. And we do not have a good solution for that at this point, which breaks mm-hmm. my heart. So
Yes, that is one of the more difficult aspects of being here. And in our last show, we talked a little bit about the breakaway civilization, which the Robes also mentioned.
Yeah.
And I think they said that at some point in time, and I'm not sure which year that was in the timeline, that the breakaway civilization actually does leave, and it takes maybe a decade for humanity to figure it out.
Yeah.
Do you remember the timing on that, or have some of them left already?
They have. A lot of them have left already. They're already visiting other planets, experimenting, exploring other civilizations. They have access to technologies that I, for one, do not have access to, although I do have access to what I'm going to call an ability to travel out of the body.
Uh-huh.
So, that's a vehicle that doesn't require any fuel.
It would have been good nutrition.
Right. Yeah. But quite a few of them have already moved beyond, way beyond where we are,
mm-hmm.
where the average person, average, citizen of the planet is living. And the time frame, by the time we wake up, for instance, I have, through my work with Dr. Levengood, we did some research into, lots of research, in fact, not only into crop circles and animal mutilations, but UFOs.
Mm.
And we were given a chunk of the Roswell craft that came down. And we were able to look at that, study that, figure out what that was, et cetera. But the more interesting thing was that there was a letter that came with it that was actually not written to us. It was written to Art Bell. But in that, there was a series, actually, of four letters. And it basically, the man who wrote it was the grandson of the man who was responsible or was part of the team who picked up the one living survivor of the Roswell crash and who worked with him for quite some time until the U.S. government was debriefing this alien fellow. And they finally were done. They couldn't get anything else out of him. And so they put him on board a jet, and they were flying that jet toward Washington, D.C., and or somewhere on the East Coast, and the whole plane disappeared. Just
wow.
But the comment that was made that this grandfather had told his grandson was that this alien being said that they were going to begin the transition in the year 2000, the transition being the transition to open contact, and that transition would be completed by 2025. There would be contact, full contact, by 2025. And so there were lots of other bits and pieces of information in there, technologies that were hinted at, technologies that Dr. Levengood and I just, ended up putting two and two together in a few cases and coming up with you know, information that was really pretty amazing in terms of metals and propulsion systems and plasma, et cetera. And so there's we have to make some sort of leap here in the next, I'm going to say the next 10 years. And I think we're making it, and I'm just, I get really excited, and then I turn on the news, and then I get really disappointed.
Well, the news is largely controlled, and it's meant to be that way.
Yes.
So we don't really, until the back is broken of the shadow government that runs all of the news of agencies, we won't be getting anything accurate or anything pertinent, because the main reason for the news is for disinformation.
Yes.
And to throw as much negativity and violence in our faces as possible to keep our spirits, our astral bodies, defenses down. And so when we're in that weakened condition, that just adds to the mix that keeps us, you know, down and unable to think clearly and unable to be healthy. As you said, all these different aspects contribute to our general well-being.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned crop circles, and we didn't get a chance to talk much about that the last time, but you said you had a pretty good idea about what causes them and what they are. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. A crop circle, let's see if I can put that in a nutshell. I'll start by saying almost all the crop circles are real. They are not hoaxed. And they have phenomena associated with them that cannot be created by a mechanical, you know, couple guys with a stomping board and some string or rope or measuring tape or whatever.
Right.
The crop circle is formed with using what's called plasma, or it's a plasma vortex. So think of it, the plasma is this group of particles, and it forms a little tornado. They usually come in two little tornadoes. Almost all the crop circles start with two counter-rotating vortices or balls of light. They look like balls of light when you photograph them. And they have a certain, they have like different kinds of energy in them, an amazing array. There are microwaves that cause heating in the plant, and so that's why the plants, you know, bend and fall down. There's the plants are made of plastic, of cellulose, which is plastic. And so when it heats, the plant bends over. There's a certain amount of force with this whirling tornado. And so with a heated stem, it becomes almost a liquid plastic. The plant just lays right down. Besides microwaves, there are ion electron avalanches. There are electric fields. There are thermal gradients. There are like seven different kinds of energies in the plasma vortex, and they all have very strict boundary conditions, and it is the changing boundary conditions that give the crop circle its pattern. So what happens is that there is plasma coming out of the there's energy coming out of the earth, and it's plasma, and there are the earth and humans and trees and plants and animals and water, everything is made of plasma.
Mm-hmm.
You are a collection of plasmas. And the earth is a collection of plasmas. In every intelligent body made of plasmas, which everything has plasma, there is going to be several major intake and outtake of centers, where you take in energy from the cosmos and or the source, dark energy, and you spit that energy out in some form. And so the intake centers in the human are called chakras. And on the earth, what we see is that the crop circles that keep appearing in England keep appearing in the same place over and over. And we investigated crop circles in water, in ice, in grass, in forests, in fields. They're everywhere. I've had one in my own backyard. And the result of these plasma vortices is that they take in, the Earth is taking in energy from the cosmos, and she is communicating. Plasma communicates, and it communicates with consciousness. We did many, little experiments in the lab and discovered that it didn't matter what it was. Even a machine could be communicated with and would respond and would show that on a chart recorder. And so what became very clear, kind of putting all of the crop circle stuff in a nutshell, was that the Earth has chakras, and the main chakras are over in England. But there are also other chakras. Crop circles are not new. There have been reports of crop circles all over the U.S. for like 150 years. There are stories that have been written about strange energies, strange lights. And when you have an area that repeatedly is subject to crop circles or this kind of energy, you end up with a sort of a renewal effect. So the seeds that we got out of crop circles usually looked sometimes like they were fried, like they were shriveled and small and not full grown, and it didn't look like they'd produce anything. But when you put them in germination paper and you put them in the germination chamber, in 2 days, they had germinated, and they were growing like gangbusters. It took three, five, sometimes 6 days for ordinary seeds to germinate. They would resist molds and mildew, bacteria, viruses. They had heat protection. They had cold protection. They had drought protection. They had virus protection. They were amazing. And so we learned how to treat seeds to get the same kind of results. And that technology is, I think, not really well known, but there were a few seed companies that did, begin treating seeds. And I think, one of the partners took that information to China, and his wife was, her father was a seedsman in China, and I think they may be using it over there to enhance plant growth. And when you see the difference in the plants, oh, my gosh, it's, the seeds that have been started at the same time and germinated, the ones treated with this plasma energy will be 3 inches taller, at a week old than something that is, just going. And you get more complete germination approaching 100%. And you get more crop, 50% more crop, 70% more crop, 400% more crop.
Well, that would certainly eliminate the need for all those caustic chemicals that we're experiencing on the food.
Yeah.
So are you saying then, I just want to get clarification on this.
Okay.
That the crop circles, the messages that show up are kind of an interaction between the consciousness of the planet communicating with the cosmos, or are you saying that there are possibly extraterrestrials shaping or directing some of these messages, or is it completely Earth? Is it a combination of everything and all and more?
Yeah, it's a combination of everything. Plasma responds directly to consciousness. So consciousness is energy, and energy is consciousness, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Energy is the motion of consciousness, and consciousness is the feeling aspect of energy. So they're two, energy and consciousness are the same thing. It's just two aspects, two sides of one coin. So what you have in a crop circle or with plasma is that plasma responds to consciousness. So as the Earth is giving off this plasma, she is communicating to the rest of the cosmos what's happening with her, and she's also taking information in. So when you get, information from, let's say, I forget, was it the Chilbolt? One of the crop circles was a response to a message that we had sent out last
year. That's right.
Years before.
That's right, yes.
That's coming from somewhere else. When you get somebody who goes over to England and stands beside the field and says, I really want to see a crop circle with this shape in it. And the next day it shows up. It's because
right.
the Earth is listening. And plasma is responding to us. The Earth is responding to us. And certainly extraterrestrials have an amazing grasp and amazing control of consciousness.
Oh, yes. I'm pretty certain about that.
Yeah.
Now, when you talk about, that'll be a whole other show. We'll have to do another show on just the ETs themselves. But since you're talking about plasma, and we have had quite a few plasma filaments and solar flares coming from the sun, and those seem to be connected to certain spots on the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
How do those affect our consciousness, since plasma is hitting the Earth and changing the core? And as I understand it, these are upsurges in consciousness and increasing consciousness on the planet, which then gets translated into the surface of the planet.
Okay, yeah, you're right. All of that is true. When the sun increases the output to us, and let's say we get hit with a plasma storm or a solar storm of some sort, everybody who gets hit with that on that side of the planet is subject to a little bit of reorganization in their energy body. That energy body is the pattern that the physical body is built on. And so as that information, that is actually information. All energy carries information. So as that hits the planet, the trees absorb that information, the people do as well, and you get this little continuous increase in consciousness. And the goal of a planet is to develop a race of beings who can take the whole system to the state of light. And that is actually what enlightenment is called.
Mm-hmm.
And so the planet, the dream of the planet is to, eventually end up with these beings who are so powerful that the whole system goes eternal. And we are right at the point now of being able to begin to get our minds around that and to begin to be responsible for that, because the only other choice is to go down in a heap of ashes.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you think that there could be two separating timelines where some go into a heap of ashes and others go to the eternal?
Yes, I do. And I have some direct experience with that.
Okay.
Yeah, there are worlds already evolved, but you can't get into those if you are not evolved to the level that world demands. You can't handle the frequency because it's such a higher frequency. It's like getting hit with lightning.
Mm-hmm.
So when people get hit with lightning, they end up with these amazing psychic abilities.
Oh, yes. Look at Danion Brinkley.
Right. And
yeah,
I know several other people.
Kundalini
is lightning within the energy body. Just this huge explosion of light within the energy body hits the brain, reorganizes the whole energy system. So, you end up with a certain level of a certain capacity, would be a better way to say it. Capacity to hold, to tolerate a certain level of frequency, and still be able to function and be relaxed and be calm and very alert, and very, very powerful in many, many ways.
Well, I think that's a great way for us to segue out, and that's where we are headed, as I see it, and I think you've said it very well, and that's a very positive note for us to end the show on. And I want to thank you for coming back again and unraveling some wonderful mysteries that are, you know, it's time for us to explore. And if you would mention your website so that people can find you and find your wonderful books, that would be great.
Okay. The website is www.pennykelly.com.
Wonderful.
And the books are all on Amazon. Just do a search for Penny Kelly under books, and you'll find them all.
Oh, my favorite of yours is still The Elves of Lily Hill Farm.
Oh, yeah.
But Rome's in the... And I'm working on the Consciousness One, too, and it's excellent. I mean, all of your writing is just...
Thank you.
Are really a pioneer in so many different fields, and I just can't thank you enough for being on the show. And our next show will be about ETs.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, that's a very interesting. I do have personal experience there, too. And
wonderful.
Some amazing stories to tell because of what we worked with in the lab. So lots of good stuff is happening.
All right. Well, then we look forward to that next show. And thank you again. And good night, everybody. Good night, Penny.
Good night. Thank you for having me.